You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Summer may be, at least feel like it's drawing to a close, although it's still kind of hot. But the growing season is still growing, going strong. And here to answer your questions about keeping your garden productive into the fall is horticulturist Gerard Lordahl, who's director of Open Space Greening here in New York City. That's at Grow NYC. And he's been coming on the show now for about 25 years. And I guess we hope that despite global warming, you'll be able to come for another 25 years.
I hope so.
Maybe we'll just start growing avocados in New York in the near future. We will be taking calls from our listeners. If you have any questions about taking care of your plants, getting rid of insects, planting seeds for fall, or any other gardening matter, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. It's always a pleasure to see you, Gerard. Can we still plant seeds this late in the season?
Yes, and what I wanted to tell your listeners was August is the month to start your fall crops. So a lot of people right now are preparing their garden beds for kale, collards, broccoli, all those cool season crops, spinach. You could do another harvest. You could do another planting of lettuce. All of those crops that you planted in the spring that you've already harvested, you could now start from seed or from small plantlets that you can get from the green markets or the box stores and put them in the ground now, because we have from we have till about the 1st of December for harvest in New York City.
Well, something like lettuce has a fairly short life. It grows for a couple of months and then it bolts. So then you just plant it again. What about other plants like tomatoes, or squash? Will they keep on producing for a while?
I just came, in fact, from a rooftop garden, Leonard, and we brought a lot of produce for you. And on this Bronx rooftop garden, there's an amazing amount of butternut squash that will continue. We have a couple of different varieties. The trick is with certain vegetables, plant different varieties that come into harvest at different times. A lot of your listeners are aware of determinate and indeterminate tomatoes. Choose different heirloom varieties of tomatoes or peppers so that you don't have them all coming into harvest at once. And as you say, you get a harvest during a long period of time. But yes, we'll be harvesting up until November here in New York City.
Can we move any of these things indoors when the weather gets a little colder?
You can, but it's a little tricky. Definitely not things like tomatoes and your annual vegetables. But many people will transplant their geraniums, let's say, or they'll bring in their perennial herbs like the mint and the lavender and the sage, and they may have a cool room in their apartment or in their house or put it in a protected terrace. If you bring it indoors, though, a lot of times you need to cut them back severely. But ideally, these plants do not want to be indoors. They want to be outdoors.
The rest of the country, or much of the rest of the country, is suffering from a terrible drought that's not been a problem here. But we have had very hot days this year. Has that had made this a good summer for gardening or a problematic one?
As I understand, half of the country was in a moderate drought, and we experienced it here in the city, to tell you the truth, especially for those of us who were gardening on rooftops or out in community gardens. There was a stretch of time, as we all know, when it was incredibly hot, there was very little rain. And I brought you some tomatoes to show you one of the issues that we have in the garden is called blossom end rot. And occasionally, Leonard, you'll get on the bottom of your tomato, I'm giving you a Beams yellow pear. And you see that sunken, corky patch on the bottom of the blossom end?
Can I just cut it off?
You can cut it off, but that is from the long, hot evening temperatures that we had. And because of an extended period of drought, the tomatoes pull a lot of their reserve nutrients, and it causes a deficiency in calcium for the tomato fruit, and that's why you get that sunken area. It's called blossom end rot. So a good remedy is try to keep your tomatoes in particular evenly moist by mulching, putting a cover over the soil, shredded newspaper, lawn clippings, anything like that, compost. And also, if you have a severe case, you could sprinkle a little bit of calcium or lime around the plants, and that will take care of blossom end rot.
In picking tomatoes, farmers often pick them before they're thoroughly ripe, and then they ripen, I guess, during the trip to the market. What about our tomatoes that we grow at home? Is it best to wait until the absolute optimum moment of ripeness before we
pick them? That's a really good point. I mean, yesterday we were up at this roof garden, as I was saying, harvesting, and some of the kids that I was working with wanted to pick the cherry tomatoes that were orange. But if you wait as long as you can until that fruit is ripe but not overripe, that's going to give you the best flavor.
And you usually know what that is. I don't know why, but they just suddenly look like they have a little sign on them saying, pick me now.
Exactly. But it is a little tricky sometimes. And teaching people the right time to harvest crops is part of what we do at Grow NYC. So that is an issue. Some vegetables ripen off of the vine. You know that. So you know that when you pick your tomatoes and they're green, you could put them on the windowsill. Our grandmothers taught us this. And they will ripen off the vine. You cannot do that with a watermelon. So you have to know when the right time to pick that watermelon is, or that squash, for instance, or that cucumber.
Or if you have enough space and you're growing corn, I don't know whether many people grow corn in their backyards, but I knew a farmer who said that he would have he would put up the water, and when he knew it was close to boiling, he'd go out and get the corn.
That's
the closer to picking, the better it tasted, he
absolutely
thought.
And you do get really good taste. But for instance, I brought you a bag of okra, and this is the green velvet okra. There you go. Now, my friends from the South who grew up in the South, they tell me that if you snap the end, if you bend the end of the tip of the okra and it breaks too easily, then it's overripe. It should just bend. So when you make your gumbo tonight, you want to use the small okra. Okra tends to get very woody, so you don't want to wait too long. You want to go with the smaller okra.
Just one more thing before we go to calls. I mentioned that lettuce bolts, and I'm not exactly sure what happens there and why suddenly the new lettuce that comes up doesn't taste as good.
What the issue is heat. And that's why our gardening is all about seasonality and temperature. So lettuce is put in the early season when it's cooler, and then it's put in again in the fall right now, as I mentioned, when it's cooler, because there are certain types of lettuce that cannot take the heat. If you go to the green market at Union Square and talk to Trina Pilonero from Silver Heights Farms, she'll tell you to go with the heat-tolerant varieties of lettuce, like deer tongue or the Four Seasons lettuce. These are lettuce varieties that are heirloom. They've been around since, in some cases, the 17th century, and they're tolerant of urban heat, and they don't bolt as easily. These are the leaf lettuces, oak leaf lettuce, red-seeded Simpson. Many of your listeners know some of the leaf lettuce that does not bolt as easy in the heat.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Director of Open Space Greening and Grow NYC. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And Janet from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm curious about something. Do you know where I can buy soil-less mix? I was told to use it to repot plants and to plant things, and I can't find any place in New York that has it. They all have Miracle-Gro and all those things. But nobody, you know, it's supposed to be a sphagnum, peat moss.
Right.
And
yeah, I know what you're talking about. A soil-less mix is basically a combination of those things, perlite, vermiculite, and
right,
often peat moss. You could get all those components at any of the box stores or at a good garden center. As an alumni of Cornell University, uh-huh, we always used to talk about Cornell peat light mix. So you remember, you may not have known, but in the ag school up at Cornell, they were developing a soil-less mix called the Cornell peat light mix.
So where do I get it?
You could get it from most of your larger garden centers. Centers.
Like, is there one in Manhattan, in Lower Manhattan?
You could, yes, Chelsea Garden Center has it in Lower Manhattan, and they're also in Red Hook. You could try any of the garden centers on Long Island. The big box stores usually carry it.
I mean,
as
Lowe's
I said,
and Home Depot and all
Yeah,
those
you'll
big.
See
Home
it
Depot?
As peat moss, Or you'll see perlite, or you'll see vermiculite, and you mix those in different proportions to get the consistency that you want. As a wholesaler, there are a lot of larger garden centers that provide it as well, but it's only to the wholesale trade. But you can find it easily available.
Thank you for calling us, Janet. Robert from Brooklyn has written in to ask, how can he get rid of his crabgrass without using pesticides and poisons?
Oh, great question.
A question that we all have.
Yeah, we all have that question. But, you know, you just got to get out there mechanically and remove it. We've been doing quite a bit of weeding in the community gardens. This is the time of year because we did get all that rain. A lot of weeds did grow. But you could also use it as a lesson to prevent weeds by doing a lot of mulching. This year we put down landscape fabric on top of our vegetable beds on top. And then on top of the landscape fabric, we put mulch, and we've had less problems with the weeds.
The landscape fabric prevents the weeds from growing?
It's a black biodegradable fabric that prevents the light from coming through, so you get less weeds. It smothers the weeds, and then you actually put something more attractive on top, and you just cut it to plant through.
Because the problem is you pull up the crabgrass, but you know that there's still some root material there, and it's just more is just going to come up.
Right, and we have a good fact sheet that's free to your listeners, Leonard. It's on managing weeds, and we'll give you the website, and you could go to our website at Grow NYC, and you could find the city lot fact sheet called Managing Weeds, which talks all about the different varieties of weeds, how to remove them without pesticides, and how certain weeds are indicative of the type of soil you have.
Anne from the Meatpacking District. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question. This is about a potted plant. I have a bunch of Boston ferns, and I think the leaves have turned pale, and then I've also have some kind of brown. Looks like a bug is eating the leaves. Like the tips will turn brown. And I was just wondering why the leaves would turn pale. I think they might have gotten too much light.
Well, and this is a general concern for most houseplants. When you bring plants indoors, you're reducing the amount of humidity that they need. Plants like at least 70% humidity. When you bring them into an apartment, you're reducing that about by half. You may not also have enough sunlight. Although ferns can tolerate shade, they like a lot of moisture. A lot of people will bring them into the bathroom when they shower. They like that high humidity. If your plant is in need of triage, then you might get a clear plastic dry cleaner's bag and wrap the entire plant and pot and saucer in clear plastic and put it in a window that gets good morning or afternoon sun. Ferns don't like very hot sun, and that should take care of it. Mist it and keep it constantly moist.
Okay.
What about the non-visible bugs?
Do you see bugs, or are you just assuming? Because brown tipping is usually from lack of water, and I think that's more your problem with your Boston fern.
Yeah, it's all over the leaves, the brown.
Well, if you do have a problem, then you could buy a non-pesticide soap solution and spray the fern, and that could keep pests off.
A listener asks, sometimes mushrooms spring up in my window boxes and containers. Is this bad? Does it mean the soil is too wet?
It means your soil is acidic, and you don't have to worry. All you need to do is go to the local garden center, get a little lime, and just sprinkle some lime on those mushrooms, or just leave the mushrooms and enjoy them. The problem
But you aren't sure you should eat them, are you?
Oh, no. I'm not a mycologist, so I don't like to recommend. You always take a chance of getting sick, or so be very careful about eating any kind of wild mushrooms unless you know you're a mycologist. But I was just going to say, sprinkle the lime or reduce the acidity in your soil. If your soil is acid and you're growing mushrooms, that means that certain nutrients in the soil are not being available to your plant. So add a little lime and test your soil for pH.
Can you grow mushrooms on purpose?
You can. I'm thinking of Yannette in Bed-Stuy at the Hattie Carthan Garden, and she cultivates mushrooms in a community garden with kids. It's a great project. They can do it indoors, and you could buy kits of starting little button mushrooms, and you can grow them and sell them at the Sunday market like they do at Hattie Carthan in Bed-Stuy.
Tom from Manhattan is on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a roof garden, and getting blight on the tomato plants. They're producing, but I get blight on them and yep. on some squash plants. And I'm wondering, I've been cutting the leaves off. I don't know if that's a good idea, the yellowed leaves. But how do you handle that?
Yeah, early blight is a fungus. And for your listeners, it's a brown target spot on the lower leaves of your tomatoes, which causes them to turn yellow and drop off. You know, before all these pesticide issues, they used to treat it with pesticides, and we no longer do that. So you want to be vigilant, and what you're doing is right. Remove those leaves. But cultural practices are better. Remember not to plant tomatoes in that same spot on your roof garden next year, because these diseases overwinter in the soil.
And don't put any of that stuff in your compost.
Right. And some scientists say that staked tomatoes are more susceptible to early blight, but I think you would have an equal number of scientists arguing that point. But blight is a problem. It's a fungus. And try to keep the soil as healthy as possible. Remove any of those leaves that have the sign of blight and keep it evenly moist and keep it fertilized. Just like with people, the more healthier you are, the better you can fight these diseases.
As a follow-up before we go to our break, Barbara in Brooklyn writes, my tomatoes are dying. Should I just pull them and plant the cold weather vegetables?
Well, she's saying they're dying, so
she's not saying why.
Try reviving them if possible. I mean, if they weren't getting water, sometimes just reviving them will bring them back. But maybe you don't have enough sunlight. But August is the time to plant your cool season crop. So if you didn't have luck with tomatoes, then you might want to try broccoli, kale, lettuce, spinach.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Director of Open Space Greening at Grow NYC. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we will be back with more right after this. We're back with Gerard Lordahl, Director of the Open Space Greening Division of Grow NYC. And you're connected also to all of the green markets?
Absolutely.
What is your relationship to the green markets?
We have over 60 green markets that were founded by Barry Benepe in the late 70s, actually. And people are most familiar in New York City with Union Square, but there's McCarran Park. I go to the Grand Army Plaza Market in Brooklyn, the Fort Greene Market. And I wanted to ask you, Leonard, there's a sandwich smackdown for kids who want to get involved at the Union Square Green Market on September 8th. You could come to the market and be part of the Sandwich Smackdown. You could go to our website, Grow NYC, and look for the Sandwich Smackdown information. You could find out about it.
So this would be all stuff that comes to the market?
Because
the markets
have
bread.
Exactly,
they have
right.
Cheeses,
so the kids will
lettuce.
Be able to design their own amazing sandwiches, really cool. And then at Union Square, also on October 10th, we have our new Green City event. So come and check us out, 10:10 at 10 o'clock in the morning, Union Square, all things green. But we have 60 markets all over the city. Our website tells people the location and, more importantly, the seasonality of things. If you want to shop for the Rosa Bianca eggplant, you can go to our green market website and find out what farm is growing them and when they're available. So our website is great for that.
Let's take some more calls. Janine from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling because we have a fig tree, and we've had it for a few years, and this year there's a lot of figs coming in. We're trying to dry them, and we bought a dryer, but we're not having so much success. So I'm wondering, is there a good time to pick them? And of course, we're getting like waves of them in. So how long can we hold on to them so that we can dry them all at once? And also, how long should we dry them?
I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on drying figs. I have to tell you, I haven't done it. I'm sure you could get some information or YouTube online. I do know that you want the figs. We have the brown turkey figs and the green figs. And I would just, I was doing it myself, I would pick them when I knew they were ripe and then just use the professional dryers that you can get at the local stores. And just like you dry soil in the oven indoors, That would be my suggestion, but I'm not going to pretend like I know that answer. I would just look further into it. But figs are grown in the city. We grow them in the community gardens, and there's a proliferation of them this year. We find that there are some years they do better than others.
With hotter weather in the north, are we more likely to see figs?
Yeah, because they're Mediterranean, and there's a lot of heat this year. If they were kept moist and if they were if they survived the winter, I think you're right. That
then we're
probably
gonna have dates.
Contributes to it.
Avocados, lemons, oranges? Are we still way off on those?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We brought in a lot of these crops. Peppers, for instance, were originally from South America. They've been around, you know, since for 6,000 years, they say. And all of these things that are common to us were brought in from different parts of the area, whether it's okra or callaloo from the Caribbean or epazote from Mexico. So we have this great cornucopia of vegetables that we consume on a regular basis that were originally from all parts of the world, and they're adapting to growing in New York City.
Susan from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. In the two evergreen bushes near the houses of a friend of mine are what I think are called bagworm caterpillars. There must be hundreds of these things.
Yeah.
You think they're part of the tree until you see the little caterpillar poke itself out.
Right.
How can these things be gotten rid of? Do you just have to pick each one of them off?
No. These are called tent caterpillars or web caterpillars, and you'll see them as big, like spider webs in the middle of trees as you drive along the highways going upstate. You see them all over the place. Those are the nests. That is where the eggs are hatching and the larvae or the caterpillars are emerging from those nests to chew on the leaves of the tree.
Wait, so caterpillars also make webs just like spiders?
These do, yes,
wow.
Exactly. And these are the webs you find. It's recommended by most professionals that if you're going to do it manually, which we recommend, no pesticides, you find the branch. If you could reach it, you could get those telescope pole saws that go up 20 feet or so, and you remove the branch with the nest and you dip it in a can of kerosene or gasoline and just kill them that way. If that's possible, that's the way to do it. If not, you have to contact a professional arborist to reduce the number for you.
And so many of the calls and questions we're getting have to do with pests in the garden. Nick in Jackson Heights writes, in June, I sprayed nematodes into my garden soil to combat black vine weevils. I've recently started to see their telltale bite marks on my hollies and liriope. Would it be effective to spray nematodes into the soil again at this time of year? And then another listener writes, my houseplants have mold growing on top of the soil. How do you prevent this from happening? I changed the soil on one plant, but it just came back.
Okay, sure. For your listeners who don't know, nematodes are microscopic eelworms, they call them, and they're beneficial insects for the most part in the soil. And they can protect the roots of certain plants, but they also can provide problems. Root knot nematodes and cabbage causes a problem. So these are beneficial insects, but at the same time, they can cause problems in the vegetable garden. Spraying them again for your particular purpose would probably be a good idea. Nematodes must have moisture. So in order for them to survive, they have to move in moist soil. So be aware of that during that dry spell when you apply them. As far as the white mold on the top, often when you have a potted plant and you're watering constantly from the bottom, you get a crust layer of white on the surface of the soil. That is a buildup of salts in the soil
from
bottom watering. You could scrape it off the top and stop watering from the bottom and continue your regimen of watering from the top, and that will dissolve that white crust of salt on the top. And I wanted to share something. Past people always ask about slugs, Leonard. If you create a moat, if you have any kind of water, a depressed pie pan, if you're trying to control slugs, and let's say you're feeding the local cats in the neighborhood, you could make a moat of water, or you could put sand or any kind of diatomaceous earth, which is sharp seashells. Snails cannot crawl on sharp surfaces, and if you protect your plants with sharp sand or diatomaceous earth, your slugs will be difficult to get to it, or else get frogs and toads to eat your snails and slugs.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Director of Open Space Greening at Grow NYC. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Laura in Brooklyn writes, I'm trying to establish a clover lawn with only moderate success. I understand I do better if I inoculate the clover seed before planting. What does that mean and how do I do it?
A lot of times clover seed is inoculated with fertilizer to promote the growth and also fungicides to prevent diseases from attacking the small seeds. It's interesting, Leonard. I was just reading that years ago we used to get grass seed mixed with clover. Because clover is one of these amazing plants that fixes nitrogen in the air, and it actually provides nitrogen back in the soil. So for those of you who are thinking of starting a lawn now, this is the right time through September to start a new lawn. Think about mixing clover seed, as your listener is suggesting, or do a whole lawn of clover. It looks good. You don't have to cut it as much. And it's fertilizing the soil by providing nitrogen through this amazing ability for these plants, like the peas and beans and soybean, to fix nitrogen into the soil.
Our next caller is Debbie from Brooklyn. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I have mature grapevines growing on a terrace up into a pergola. And it sounds great, but they're very thinly, and they were very dry this summer and required a lot of watering, and one plant didn't have grapes and the other one had sort of dry raisin type grapes. Is there anything I can do to make them more lush, or should I get rid of them?
There's a lot you need to do to make them more lush, which is the problem with grapes. Grapes are really high maintenance. Grapes are not the kind of fruit you want to grow by just sitting back and harvesting them. They take a lot of work. You have to be pruning them regularly.
Is this why wine is so expensive?
Well, it is labor intensive. Yeah, you're right. But, for those listeners thinking about growing fruit, blueberries, high bush blueberries, low bush blueberries are much more low maintenance, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries. Once you start dealing with grapes, in order to get really good, prolific grapes, you have to have full sun. You have to check them for powdery mildew and different kinds of diseases that attack them. But you must prune them because the grapes are born on certain branches. So I could send you information on cultivating and pruning grapes. I'll give out my website information and the phone number, and we'll send it to you in the mail.
Now, we've gotten a lot of calls from listeners who wonder why whatever the plant is, it's producing fabulous flowers, but not the vegetable that they expected or whatever else they expected to come out of it. This is a common problem. It looks like it's healthy.
Right.
But you're not getting any fruit. Why?
Sometimes
why does that happen?
It's people who are overzealous with their fertilizing. If you get a lot of nitrogen, if you put a lot of compost, you're growing a lot of greens and green stems. But fruit on most plants needs calcium, potassium, magnesium. It needs the micronutrients and nitrogen. Too much nitrogen can often create too much leafy material. Also, lack of fruiting could be from lack of pollinators. If you don't have the bees to pollinate your flowers, that could cause a problem with developing the fruit.
Aren't there certain flowers that you can bring into your garden that will attract the bees?
Absolutely. So our pollinators are important, which is why we don't want to use pesticides. We want the honeybees. We want the birds. We have fact sheets on attracting birds in your garden, pollinators, butterfly bush, asclepias, bee balm. When I work in the garden with kids, Jocelyn in Brooklyn was just asking me, why are there so many bugs in the garden in Brooklyn? She's 4 years old. And I told Jocelyn that she needs to understand that those bees are not really interested in her. They want the nectar so they could pollinate that fruit, which is why we can't grow tomatoes indoors. You don't have the pollinator.
And New York, by the way, produces some great honey because we use less pesticide than other places.
Exactly.
Where most honeybees actually are kept. Cliff from Rockland County asks if you could recommend a hydroponic system that would work in his basement to grow tomatoes. Are there good systems?
If you go to our website, we have a rainwater harvesting manual, and we touch on aquaponics. Phil Warner at Cornell Cooperative Extension in the Bronx is the local person who's been doing hydroponics. And I had some experience at Glee Farms. PVC pipe cemented together can often do the job. I'll give you our website, and we'll send you the manual on starting a hydroponic system.
So what is the website?
So if you go to grownyc.org,
that's simple enough.
And the Open Space Greening Program, and you could call us at 212-788-7923 and leave your phone number and address and tell us what fact sheet you would like. If you cannot access the fact sheets online, you will be happy to send them to you by mail.
Just one more thing. A listener asks, are there any resources such as a website with pictures to help identify the weeds that are likely to appear in a Brooklyn yard? And I'm assuming Brooklyn yard means any yard in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at one right now from Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a great series of Cornell information bulletins. The Botanic Gardens in Brooklyn and the Bronx, Snug Harbor, all have affordable pamphlets on managing weeds. But the simplest thing, if you could go online and just Google weeds, you could get a great color photo of crabgrass, lamb's quarters, plantain, purslane, and you'll know exactly what weeds you have.
We can't get to any of the calls, more of the calls that have come in. A lot of people with really good questions. So sorry, Gerard will be back on our show sometime in the near future. But again, if they want to find out more, they can go to your website, grownyc.org, or call 212-788-7923, was
that's
that number?
Correct. And I'll give you my email as well. You could send a message to me at G, my initial, G Lordahl, L-O-R-D-A-H-L, at grownyc.org, and we'll be happy to respond to your public inquiries.
And thank you so much for coming by again,
always
Gerard.
Great to see you, Leonard.